New York is emerging from a high-stakes 2024 election that could redefine the city and state's priorities on issues ranging from housing to public safety. While national headlines zeroed in on the presidential race, there were races close to home in New York State that may influence future policy decisions. Today, we're joined by Jeffrey Pollack, founding partner and president of Global Strategy Group and one of the country's leading pollsters. Named New York's top political consultant, Jeffrey will help us unpack the election outcomes and give us a sense of how they could shape New York's future. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Let's get real about the election results.
I'd love to get real about the election results. It was quite a day. I'm still recovering, and it's almost a week later at this point.
Well, we appreciate you being here. Donald Trump is returning to the White House.
I heard that.
And he's promised policy changes in his second term that could be deeply felt in New York. So let's talk through some of the areas where his policies are most likely to affect New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. I think everyone in the city especially is thinking about housing. What do you anticipate seeing from this administration?
So it's hard for me to predict what Trump wants to do as relates to housing. The interesting thing is that the person who had the most aggressive housing policy that was put out there was, in fact, Kamala Harris. And she talked about it and advertised about it, talked about building 3 million new homes. Not surprisingly, Donald Trump didn't say much about almost any policy because the Trump campaign was about rhetoric and about scare tactics. And by the way, those things worked. So I'm not, I can't say that he was wrong about that. But it's hard to predict where things will go with housing. It is clear that we have a massive need across this country. And so one of the things that I think is going to happen, particularly in a blue state like we are, less blue than maybe before, but still blue, is it's going to default to the states. And on that level, you know, you've seen Kathy Hochul, the governor, do a tremendous amount and talk about housing as a priority. She made it a priority in her budget last year, and I think that's going to continue going forward. Because if we can't build more housing, this state is going to continue to become less and less affordable.
Yeah, so even though this topic hasn't been a big talking point during the Trump campaign, do you anticipate seeing any support for housing affordability or commercial to residential conversions?
I don't. I think Trump is sensitive to stuff that happens in New York City for obvious reasons. And there are so many people who are influential in this town who are going to be able to talk to him. So, but I think things like residential conversions were going to happen under whichever administration, because the reality of the post-pandemic, post-COVID life, where all of us are not working in the office as much as we used to, has necessitated a move to that. And that's not a partisan thing. I think it is a very blatant reality. And of course, REBNY is such an important organization and will continue to advocate for things that are important to this city and keep this city thriving. And so thinking through what the next phase of housing development is for the state and the city, I think is going to emanate from a place like REBNY, from a place like ABNY, from a place like the folks who are in the city who've been fighting this fight for a long time and understand what we so desperately need in both the city and the state.
So Trump is historically a real estate guy.
Yeah.
So what
not is a it, good one, but historically a real estate guy.
What does it say to you that housing production, housing policy is not something that he talks about regularly?
Well, it's hard to figure out what he's going to want to do because, again, he didn't have policy priorities other than things like talking about immigration and tariffs. And so the question is going to be where he can move this Congress over the next 2 years. And that's TBD, in particular the House, which is going to be such a narrow majority for the Republicans, we believe, that he's going to have to sort of tread the line. And so his real estate interests and his New York interests, I think, are going to take a back seat to the interest of red state and red congressional members' priorities so that he can get things through.
Sure. So to that point, let's talk about immigration, which is
maybe
the top of his list.
Yeah.
This presidency could have a major effect on immigrant communities here in New York and also the recent influx of migrants to the city.
Yeah.
I mean, the mayor came out and said that mass deportation is something that will not happen in New York. But from a policy perspective, what do you think we can expect?
Well, I also think mass deportation is not going to happen. And it's more of a, again, Donald Trump being a rhetorical candidate than a reality candidate. Do I think he's going to be tougher on the border and do things, bring back Title 42 and maybe more? Sure. But like the mass deportation thing feels like a scare tactic much more than a reality. So I think we're going to have tough on immigration rhetoric. But do I think there's going to be actual mass deportations? No, it's hard to believe. It's also not really where the American public is. They want tighter borders. They want smarter borders. But do they want to throw people out of this country who want to be here? Not really.
So this is an issue that's linked so heavily to public safety. And throughout Trump's campaign, we did see tough on crime rhetoric along with that tough on immigration rhetoric.
Yeah.
What do you anticipate changing on the public safety front?
Well, I mean, again, the rhetoric doesn't match the reality. Like, the truth is that crime on the subways is one of those bullshit issues. There isn't. Like, the reality is we're talking about numbers that don't reflect the reality. But that's also true of the largest thing that impacted this election, which is the economy. All the economic, the macroeconomic numbers are fantastic, but that doesn't matter when people aren't feeling good about the economy. So that's what this is about, people not feeling good about the subways. And the New York Post, frankly, putting things on the front page that are exceptions, not the rule. So what I think we have to do, and look, I work for Democrats. My job is to elect Democrats. And so when you look at somebody like Pat Ryan, for example, in the Hudson Valley, who just won his last district over a former New York City Police Department cop, and won the race by 13 points when last time he won his race by, I think, one or two, I forget. Pat Ryan ran as a tough on the border, common sense, security kind of Democrat. Tom Suozzi did the same thing in Long Island in his special election last time. So, like, the Democrats need to understand and look to where the voters are and speak in a language that makes sense without having any need to scare people in a way that Donald Trump did. But people need to hear that the Democrats care about safety and care about what's happening on a day-to-day basis in this city. And by the way, it's not just New York. You know, the mayor of San Francisco got thrown out for the same reason. The mayor of Portland, Oregon, the most liberal place on the planet, thrown out and cast aside for a much more tough on crime, tough on homelessness kind of individual. So that's the place where the voters are. And for political candidates, sometimes it's or most of the time, we have to meet the voters where they are, not teach them something they don't believe.
Right. I think this is interesting to me because it seems like an issue where the data is not lining up with what
not
people
at all.
Are feeling, as you said. And storytelling is so important. Obviously, storytelling is paramount for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
What does this mean for the future? How do we tell stories that, you know, make people feel better about how things are going in the city?
Well, look, I come from the middle of the Democratic Party. So I come with a very clear ideological perspective that, like, when we're talking about defunding the police, we're talking as foolishly as we humanly can. Which may be why you saw some of those folks who are defunders who have now been thrown on their asses out of Congress. I think that we, you can't teach the voters something. We say this in campaigns all the time. You have to meet the voters where they are. If you're teaching the voters something, you're losing. So that doesn't mean the voters are always right, but they do get the final say. Having a narrative and telling a story that matches their reality is very important. That being said, we also have to call BS when it is out there. And the New York Post in particular stirs so much of the pot in this town as they drive a tremendous amount of the political coverage and on a day-to-day basis. The state is safer. The city is safer. Like, there's all the proof that we need, but people need to feel it. People need to feel that the subways are working and that the subways are safe. So that's the job of all the candidates, of all the people in government to make that case to folks and to tell those stories in a way that they understand and doesn't sort of go over their heads. I don't mean that obnoxiously. I mean sort of that we're talking over them. As opposed to talking to them.
Yeah, meet people where they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Let's talk about infrastructure and transportation. The future of major city projects could be in jeopardy without federal support.
Yeah.
Can you talk through some of those projects and how this administration's policy changes might affect them?
Yeah, so the biggest one, of course, is the Gateway Tunnel. My belief is that things have gone too far for Donald Trump to mess that up. But that doesn't mean that there are other projects that he's not going to try to monkey with. I am encouraged by the phone call that Governor Hochul and President Trump had the other day. I read about it. I wasn't on the call, so I don't know about it. But I do think that Trump understands that this state and this city is in part his legacy, as you talked about before. And he does not want to see it fall apart. I also think this is a man who gets to look at the data and what happened in New York State and sees a tremendous amount of success in terms of his message. I may hate it, but he improved his margins by double digits. Now, that happened in lots and lots of states, not just New York. It happened in New Jersey, even bigger, frankly, than in New York. It happened in California. So his message clearly resonated across a number of constituencies, particularly young, Black, Hispanic. And we have to see that for what it is and understand that whatever the Democratic Party is trying to sell to those voters, they're not buying. But going back to Trump, again, he's taken the flip side, which is he actually saw success from what he did. And so why would he try to destroy that success by just penalizing New York? One of the strangest things is going to be the battle over the SALT deduction, which, of course, he himself took away as a punishment to the blue states. And during the campaign decided, let's bring that back. That will be remarkable and a remarkable 180 for a guy who, what we know at his core, is that he has no principles, which is why he can do 180s and 360s in such a fashion.
Great example. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, to say the least. Did you see any leadership changes throughout the state that will be impactful?
Well, the biggest leadership change that seems to be, and I'm no expert on Trump, I should always be clear, but the biggest change may very well be the largest mouth in New York, which is Elise Stefanik, being taken out of Congress and over to the United Nations. Mm-hmm. That may not be great for the United Nations, but probably good for Congress. And good for sort of sanity. But otherwise, from a New York perspective, we still have the most important Democrats are in the most important places of power in Senator Schumer and Leader Jeffries. And I think that is and Trump knows that those are the only two guys that he's got to deal with on the Democratic side.
Right.
So no, other than that, no, I don't really see major, major leadership stuff either federally or at the state level at this time.
Right. So this is a city-specific thing.
Yeah.
But there were a bunch of propositions on the ballot.
Yeah.
And many of them passed. The one that got the most attention was Prop 1, which is the New York Equal Rights Amendment. What impact do you think this is going to have?
Well, I mean, I think voters saw through some of the shenanigans, particularly some of the scare tactics of the far right that were making outrageous claims about what this would mean. At the end of the day, this was about making sure that abortion was a truly protected right in New York. So I think kudos to the Prop 1 team, kudos to Governor Hochul, kudos to sort of the messaging folks who are, my firm was deeply involved in some of the messaging stuff on there. Because I think voters saw through it. Prop 1 at its heart is about fairness and about sort of making sure that we're treating folks equally, which is inherently a New York value. And when you read that proposition, even though it had a lot of language in it that was sort of hard to understand, at its core was about both abortion and equality. And I think New Yorkers get that.
Yeah, I think so too. So in closing, do you have any words of optimism to leave us with?
Well, you know, look, it's pretty hard to be optimistic about from my seat when I see in some ways a rejection of Democrats in so many places. I also have seen a lot of bright spots. The fact that we saw Democratic senators win even in places that Donald Trump won, in places like Nevada and Michigan and Wisconsin. Three women, by the way, who won. That's interesting and good because it means that they're split ticketing. And split ticketing isn't a bad thing. Split ticketing is one of those things that I think gets us sort of the common sense candidates that we need. You saw that in congressional races. You saw it in a place like Pat Ryan, who I mentioned, or Laura Gillen winning their races. So that's a very political answer to your question. What I tell folks and what I tell my children about this election is, you know, I've been through this. I've been through wins. I've been through losses. In 2016, when I thought the world was going to end, you know, the world didn't end. And New York's a pretty resilient place. It's why we live here. Otherwise, why the hell would we? What I know is that the fight on the Democratic side is going to continue. I hope that we get smarter. I hope we get smarter about how to win. I hope we get smarter about how to talk to voters who clearly are not loving what they're hearing from us. And I'm certainly not putting down my fight just in the face of a Trump win. In fact, it's just the opposite.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for being real.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Real Talk NYC is produced by the Real Estate Board of New York. Today's episode was edited and hosted by Grace Boak with help from Jason Ryan. Thanks for listening.